Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money from the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots, and next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, "We have a problem." She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So you could just see
$600,000 deducted.
It. Yeah.
So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, "Hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years." "Man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here." "Oh, man." He said, "This woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man. Let me get some lawyers. So he called up some. I got in a huge tax situation in 2008 because my divorce was in 2005 and my accountant had gotten in cahoots. And next thing you know, my accountant died and a girl that worked for him called my lawyer and said, we have a problem. She had found on the floor all my tax forms for 7 years signed and with the checks stapled to them. So I'm thinking, I done signed and I done stapled the checks. Well, they were cashing the checks, keeping the money, and not turning in the tax form. They took the money out of the account that matched the exact, because I wasn't watching it.
So
like
you could just see $100,000, $600,000
deducted. So I'm thinking it's the check. Little did I know, it was some people taking the money out.
For 7 years?
For 7 years.
How much money did that?
I ended up owing $22
million. Wow.
$22 million with the penalties. So now, Listen to me, man. Me and my wife in 2008, I get the call. And the way I found out was, my lawyer called me and said, hey, man, we got a problem. You haven't paid taxes in 7 years. I said, man, what are you talking about? I paid taxes. I've been writing the checks and all this here. Oh, man. He said, this woman found your taxes in your accountant's office on the floor. Every tax check I had written and every was stapled together for 7 years, quarterly taxes, all of it. So he said, man, that's tax evasion. You can go to prison. And I said, what are we going to do? So he said, hold on, man, let me get some lawyers. So he called up some tax accountants out of Chicago. These boys was the best. And they set me down and they said, man, we got a major problem. He said, I got a friend working at the IRS. Let me take the first year. We took the first year and we sent it in. And he said, man, well, this is an old tax return. He said, man, we got a problem. He got more, but he didn't know it. And so we need a tax payment plan. So the tax payment plan was so astronomical that it was no way I could pay this. So the deal was, if you miss one payment, we come and seize all your assets and you go into jail. That was the deal. So the way I found out I was in real bad trouble was my accountants, my former manager, lawyer, got on a conference call to discuss it. But they sent out an email with the conference call number to my assistant. But it wasn't supposed to go to me. She inadvertently gave it to me. I wasn't even supposed to be on the call. So when I logged in, they were already talking and I just didn't announce myself. And I heard them say, nobody can live under this amount of stress. There's no way he can pay the back taxes, pay his current taxes, and his living expenses. And I heard a guy on the phone say, what are we going to do when he goes to jail? And I hung the phone up. I went upstairs. I said, Marjorie, I said, Marjorie, we got a problem. When I explained it to her, Marjorie started crying. She sat down and cried. My wife cried for 2 straight days. She said, Steve, what you going to do? I said, I'm going to go to work. I took every comedy gig in this country. I signed every contract. I went to work, man. I worked every single Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I went to every venue, the Verizon, Staples Center, MCI, Phillips. I sold out the Fox. I went everywhere. I stayed on the radio, man. I'm coming, sold out. I never missed a payment. And for 4 years in a row, I was sending $650,000 a month to the government. Plus, I had to pay my current taxes.
New taxes.
I couldn't get behind on nothing. And I was living. So I was credit cards, running them up, paying them off. And finally, man, in 2012, I sold 49% of my radio company to iHeart. I got a check, man. I got me a check. And then, so I paid the government completely off to zero. And that was the first time, man, I could breathe. And then the pay-per-view, I said, let me get out of stand-up, because my wife said, Steve, you finna be a major TV star. You're going to have to stop telling the jokes you're telling, because you're going to ruin your career. Because she saw the political correctness turning. And so she said, Steve, you can stop if you want to. I said, baby, I can't ever stop telling jokes. It's who I am. She said, well, okay, but you got to watch what you say. And all of my TV shows are sponsor-driven. The radio is sponsorship-driven. I said, man, let me get out of this, because I need time to go do more TV. And so I did one last comedy show, but I did it on pay-per-view. And little did I know, for $8, you could watch my last show. I had no idea how many people was going to tune in for that. I made a lot of money. It was the biggest single paycheck I ever made. And next thing you know, I was back. Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go over on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse
with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here, trying to do better. I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land. Okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children, because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine, or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now, I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
Okay, now in 2 minutes here, we're going to discuss e-commerce and social media distinctions. Give us about 2 minutes on that. So while we're waiting on that, let's play this.
He is going to be locked up for a very long time. Today, the man who admitted to killing a teenager over a pair of Air Jordans learned his fate in court. And it tops our news at 5:30. The judge told 20-year-old Dante Ford that he lacked a moral compass just before sentencing to 28 to 50 years in prison.
Ford pleaded guilty to second-degree murder in the shooting death of 17-year-old Corey Harris Thomas back in June during what was supposed to be a sale of a pair of Air Jordans. Priya Mann following the story. Priya, the victim's parents were in the courtroom, I understand.
And Karen spoke at length. Corey's parents spoke about everything they did to try to prevent their son from living this lifestyle of making a quick buck. He was enrolled in a lot of sports. He went to school in the Grosse Pointe area. But in the end, he lost his life over a pair of expensive gym shoes.
The glider, I wish I couldn't hold on and tell my love
him. The parents of Corey Harris Thomas spoke about their devastating loss.
And not being able to open the door and tell him to get up so he can go to school. It breaks my heart.
That was my first one. We did a lot together.
In June, the 17-year-old was shot and killed on the west side over a pair of Air Jordans. Prosecutors say 20-year-old Dante Tyrell Ford met up with the teen and his friend to buy the shoes. During the exchange, the friend and Ford pulled out weapons, and the teen was killed.
Mr. Ford took the life of someone almost the same age, and over what? A pair of Air Jordan Nikes.
Ford declined to speak at his sentencing. The victim's parents say they tried everything to prevent their son from being a victim of violence.
I thought that taking him to a suburb would avoid a situation like this, because it happened to so many young men.
And Mr. Ford knew that what he was doing was wrong. He had no right at gunpoint to rob and then eventually kill someone over a pair of gym shoes.
And Ford will spend 28 to 50 years in prison. Corey's parents say they really regret allowing him to stay home from school that day. They were having a new air conditioning unit installed. Corey offered to help his dad put that air conditioning unit in their home. He would later go for this ride with his friend and Ford and never made it home. Reporting live from Frank Murphy Hall of Justice, I'm Priya Mann, Local 4.
Such a very sad story. All right, thank you, Priya.
Okay, we need about four more minutes here, so let's get to Van Jones. Give us 4 minutes. We'll be right to the phone lines. And our topic today, e-commerce and social media distinctions.
Well, it's easier to be a parent this morning. It's easier to be a dad. It's easier to tell your kids character matters.
Obviously
it matters.
Not.
Tell them the truth matters. Being a good person matters. And it's easier for a whole lot of people. If you're Muslim in this country, you don't have to worry if the president doesn't want you here. If you're an immigrant.
Immigrant, huh? Hold up. This nigga sitting up crying about immigrants? Who gives a fuck if the president don't want them here? They ass still here, ain't they? I mean, who really gives a fuck? They don't really experience the shit that black... Notice how he ain't say shit about black people. And this nigga literally got his ass on TV in front of all these white folk and cried like a bitch over some fucking Muslims and immigrants. Feminine black women don't respect bitch-ass niggas like this. Congratulate all the mammies and the buck broken Sambos for making it possible for Jim Crow Joe and Kamala Lockamup Harris to win this election. Thanks to you all, now the white supremacist police department will be getting $300 million more dollars for equipment to kill and whoop your ass with. Thanks to you all, now we have an anti-black vice president. She's from India, which has a very strong anti-black culture. And Kamala has admitted to locking black people, black women, and men up for fun. And so has Joe Biden. Thanks to the Sambo sector of black society, now LGBT will be a legislative priority, according to Joe. Not a black agenda. Black Americans won't be getting shit, but all these other groups to get all these civil rights laws and all kind of shit. Anti-black immigrants and all the civil rights and the benefits will be going to them, and black Americans will be getting absolutely nothing. And Joe Biden, he didn't even offer black Americans anything, and neither did Kamala.
So I'm not going to sit here and say I'm going to do something that's only going to benefit black people? No.
Folks knew about Kamala Harris and Joe Biden's horrible track record when it comes to black people, and people chose to actively ignore that because they prefer closet racists over an open and honest one. To be honest, we're back at square one. You know, the older generation sabotage the younger generation like they always do. And a lot of these Sambos and mammies do not give one fuck about Kamala Harris and Joe Biden locking those black people up. Because to be honest, they can't stand black people. And if they was in a position to lock black people up, they would too. The older generation does not care about the black community as a whole. They only care about their own personal butter biscuits and feeling like they're in control by participating in an illegitimate system such as voting. And for all these boule bitches that's celebrating on Twitter, y'all really think y'all just did something? Y'all ain't doing shit. Y'all just doing what white mommy and white daddy told you to, and you just want a pat on the head from the dominant society. I see right through all that fake praise. And me personally, I'm going to keep doing what I've been doing, living my traditional lifestyle, laying low, because I know these white supremacists are pissed and everybody is giving black people credit for Joe Biden women. Oh, black women's saved the day. The fucking bread-eating mammy saved the day. Now that shit putting a target on our fucking backs. So now we got to stay strapped, and I want all of my real supporters to be safe out there because I know the white supremacists want to retaliate. That was my opinion on this election. I just wanted to let you guys know to please make sure you guys are subscribed. I'm almost at 6,000 subscribers and, you know, it keeps, like, going down, going up and down. And I just want to make sure I have all you guys' full support. So don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. And also, if you appreciate Black Media, feel free to support this YouTube channel by donating. Black Media, like mine, is not monetized. So I really appreciate all you guys' support. And I will see you guys in my next video. Peace, love, and Black Power. Bye.
Man, I've been looking for her video for months. Man, let me look. I got to look her up. I got her under Van Jones. Man, where do I have her? Okay, Singles Day Van Jones. All right, real quick. All right, we're doing an ebook on this. There's a lot of people that, you know, there's some distinctions. Like, you know, a lot of people, you know, I got so many huge. Take down from social media metrics, particularly when it comes to money. There are, when you're online and you want to make some money, okay, because some people say, well, I want so many subscribers and, you know, you can make this much money when you get so many subscribers. First thing on YouTube, there are two basic distinctions of subscribers. There's paid subscribers and there's non-paid subscribers. You can have a million people on Facebook that are subscribers, but they're all non-paid subscribers. All right? So when online and you want to make money, you have to decide on, all right, hold it. Do I want subscribers? Do I want non-paid subscribers, paid subscribers? Do I want customers? A customer is different from a subscriber. All right? Do you want to deal with buyers? Or do you want to deal with sellers? All right. Do you want to have a relationship with the people that you meet online? All right. What kind of platform do you want to do? Like, for instance, even with villagers, I'm looking for villagers. If you've got a piece of land, you know, I got an acre or two of land, and you want to rent that out, okay, you might be looking for villagers. You might want to set up your own village. What's more valuable to you, villagers or subscribers? Villagers can mean a residual income. Some people go online, they're looking for citizens. That's a hybrid of a villager. All right, so... And then what platform? You know what? I prefer eBay over YouTube. Why? Because eBay is where buyers and sellers go. Whereas with YouTube, everybody goes there. But on eBay, you know that if you're looking to sell something, you got eyeballs that have money ready to go. Facebook Marketplace, what's more valuable to you? Are you looking for customers? If you're looking for customers, go to Facebook Marketplace. You want customer has money to pay right now on Facebook Marketplace. That's not the case with a subscriber. A person can subscribe to you and never buy anything from you ever. Now, if you want a paid subscriber on YouTube, all right, then, you know, you might have to have a special membership And it, you won't get that over time. Whereas on Facebook Marketplace, it's instantaneous. So I'm writing a little ebook on this to bring up these little distinctions because, just like I say, some people, when you go online and a lot of people get frustrated. For instance, I rent my driveway out for $400 a month. I was looking for a customer, not a subscriber. Subscribers don't rent anything, but customers do. Anyway, 619-768-2945. Let's go to the phone lines here. 773, your mic is open. 773, mic open. Okay, well, they probably stepped out. Oh, let me find. I'm gonna see if I can find her again.
Well, it's easier to be a parent this morning. It's easier to be a dad. It's easier to tell your kids character matters.
Obviously
it matters.
Not.
Tell them the truth matters. Being a good person matters. And it's easier for a whole lot of people. If you're Muslim in this country, you don't have to worry if the president doesn't want you here. If you're an immigrant.
Immigrant? Hold up. This nigga sitting up crying about immigrants? Who gives a fuck if the president don't want them here? They ass still here, ain't they? I mean, who really gives a fuck? They don't really experience the shit that black... Notice how he ain't say shit about black people. And this nigga literally got his ass on TV in front of all these white folk and cried like a bitch over some fucking Muslims and immigrants. Them that black women don't respect bitch-ass niggas like this. I just want to congratulate all the mammies and the buck-broken Sambos for making it possible for Jim Crow Joe and Kamala Lockham-Up Harris to win this election. Thanks to you all, now the white supremacist police department will be getting $300 million more dollars for equipment to kill and whoop your ass with. Thanks to you all, now we have an anti-black vice president. She's from India, which has a very strong anti-black culture. And Kamala has admitted to locking black people, black women, and men up for fun. And so has Joe Biden. Thanks to the Sambo sector of black society, now LGBT will be a legislative priority, according to Joe. Not a black agenda. Black Americans won't be getting shit, but all these other groups get all these civil rights laws and all kind of shit. Anti-black immigrants and all the civil rights and the benefits will be going to them, and black Americans will be getting absolutely nothing. And Joe Biden, he didn't even offer black Americans anything, and neither did Kamala.
So I'm not going to sit here and say I'm going to do something that's only going to benefit black people. No.
Folks knew about Kamala Harris and Joe Biden's horrible track record when it comes to black people, and people chose to actively ignore that because they prefer closet racists over an open and honest one. To be honest, we're back at square one. You know, the older generation sabotage the younger generation like they always do. And a lot of these Sambos and mammies do not give one fuck about Kamala Harris and Joe Biden locking those black people up. Because to be honest, they can't stand black people. And if they was in a position to lock black people up, they would too. The older generation does not care about the black community as a whole. They only care about their own personal butter biscuits and feeling like they're in control by participating in an illegitimate system such as voting. And for all these boule bitches that's celebrating on Twitter, y'all really think y'all just did something? Y'all ain't doing shit. Y'all just doing what white mommy and white daddy told you to, and you just want a pat on the head from the dominant society. I see right through all that fake praise. And me personally, I'm going to keep doing what I've been doing, living my traditional lifestyle, laying low, because I know these white supremacists are pissed and everybody is giving black people credit for Joe Biden women. Oh, black women's save the day, the fucking bread-eating mammy save the day. Now that shit putting a target on our fucking backs. So now we got to stay strapped, and I want all of my real supporters to be safe out there because I know the white supremacists want to retaliate. That was my opinion on this election. I just wanted to let you guys know to please make sure you guys are subscribed. I'm almost at 6,000 subscribers, and, you know, it keeps, like, going down, going up and down, and I just want to make sure I have all you guys' full support, so don't forget to like, comment, and subscribe. And also, if you appreciate Black Media, feel free to support this YouTube channel by donating. Black Media, like mine, is not monetized, so I really appreciate all you guys' support, and I will see you guys in my next video. Peace, love, and Black Power. Bye!
Okay, man, I've been, I don't know the name of that channel. Anyway, I'll try to find it. Okay, I'm attempting to open up the mic at 773. Okay, well, 773, it's buffering. Oh, we got an announcement tomorrow. We're we're going to sort of mimic, well, not mimic, copy off of Luckenbach, Texas. Oh, man, I'm trying to look. Okay, let me see if I can do this another way. I'm trying to get to 773. So I got to refresh my page. I'm looking for I'm looking for a particular channel. And all right, I'm waiting for the buffer. Anyway, we're Luckenbach, Texas. Luckenbach, Texas is a town that's about 10 acres, 9 or 10 acres big. So we're sort of going to model a smaller version of that based on 4 acres. We need a little help with it. So tomorrow, I'll be asking for help. Oh, you know what? Another thing with the distinctions here. Some of you people might need partners or people that will donate money. You need donors more than subscribers. So, actually, I'm writing up a little ebook on that. Oh, man, Okay, let's see if our page, I mean, it's not. Okay, 773, are you there? Okay. All right, well, 773, I don't know where they are. Okay, well, they've obviously stepped off. Open mic six, what do you call it? 619-768-2945. looking all over for this one blogger. Okay. Not here. I wish I can. All right. So yeah, 619-768-2945. Open mic, call in. 773. They're probably out doing something. Okay. Well. All right. Well. Let's see. All right. Well, let's wait. Let's get back to Steve Harvey while we're waiting for our guests to come back to the phone.
By the time you met Blondon, how big were you getting? Like, how much were you buying on a regular basis?
Oh, no, maybe a couple pounds, 16 pounds maybe.
16 pounds.
Yeah, 8 pounds, something like that. At that time, pounds were going for 35,000 a pound, yeah.
By the time you met Blondon, how much cash did you have?
I don't know, I had a few hundred thousand.
A few hundred thousand. So you weren't a millionaire back then, but you were well off.
I was doing good.
You were doing good.
I was doing pretty good.
So how did the whole Blondon thing come together?
Well, see, we were still getting from the Blondon, but we wasn't going directly to Blondon.
It was a middleman.
It was a middleman. So the only thing happened when we met him personally was that the middleman had got cut out, which dropped the price even more. But we were already getting it from Blondon, technically.
Technically.
Yeah.
You just weren't talking to him.
I just wasn't talking to him.
Okay. So how did you end up meeting him?
I bought him.
You bought him?
Mm-hmm.
So you basically bought your connect.
Yeah.
So you told your middleman, I'm going to give you
$60,000.
$60,000, and you introduced me to your connect. And you can walk away with that $60,000.
Yep. And then Blondon paid $60,000 as well.
To meet you?
Yeah, to meet me.
So the connect got $120,000 to essentially walk away from that part of the business?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he got spooked, I heard. You know, somebody had got busted.
He was trying to get out of the game.
He was trying to get out of the game, so he felt, you know, he'd take $160,000, go back to Honduras, and live like a king.
$120,000. And that's what he did? He left?
I guess, yeah, for a while.
Okay. So now you're working with the Connect. Blondon.
Yep.
How is that relationship different than your previous relationship?
We got a lot tighter, you know. Me and Blondon hung out a little bit together. You know, I would go over his house. The other guys were more meet on the street, switch cash for money, you know, money for drugs, and it's over. But me and Blondon, we kind of hung out. We talked about business. So we developed kind of what I thought was a friendship as well.
Okay. Now, Blondon is the one that actually took you to the next level.
Technically, yeah, and no, you know.
Explain.
I mean, we took each other to the next level.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
You know, I wasn't out here helpless and homeless, you know. When I met him, I had a few hundred thousand dollars, and I had clientele. I knew the streets, you know. I knew all the shot callers from every hood in L.A., you know. So he helped, but, you know, not by himself.
According to some articles that I looked up, and you could tell me whether this is accurate or not, it said that you were making up to $3 million a day.
I've had days that I made $3 million.
You had a $3 million day?
Yeah.
Okay.
A few of them.
A few of them. Explain how you have a $3 million day.
Well, your big customers come through, a couple of them, and they drop off $200,000, $300,000. There were three or four spots that I had in L.A. where guys that stood out on the street that would make $100,000 a day, each one.
Each one?
Yeah.
Now, this actually built up. I guess you had operations in 42 cities?
I don't know how many cities. I mean,
a lot of cities.
We had a lot of cities.
All throughout the country.
Yeah.
So explain to me, and okay.
You know, different people do their estimates and their calculations and all
right.
that stuff. So,
and I guess the other thing is that you moved $900 million worth of cocaine.
Or more.
Or more. Which in today's dollars is the equivalent of $2.5 billion.
Yeah.
So you were moving.
You figure like this here. If you do 100 kilos in one day, that cocaine goes a lot of places. You know, a lot of people, they taking it, they putting it on airplanes. You know, they moving it around. Now you're talking about you move 200 kilos in one day. Or 250. You're talking about a lot of, that's a lot of cocaine.
Okay. If you were to stack up 250 kilos right now, how big would it be? Would it cover this entire room?
No. 250 kilos is not that big. Maybe the size of that couch.
That's it?
Yeah.
And that's the equivalent of $3 million?
According to what price you're getting.
Yeah.
What time it is, you know, you know, one time I paid as much as $48,000 for a kilo. So $3 million won't go for it when you're buying them like that.
Right.
But if you're getting them for 10 a kilo, you can buy 300.
Okay.
So all that factors in, you know. And I, like I said, I paid as much as, well, I paid $3,300 for an ounce of cocaine. If you add that up, you're talking about like $100,000 for 1 kilo. But for the whole kilo, I paid $48,000 cash for one. And I've also bought them for $9,500.
Right.
As low as $9,500.
So how were you actually getting this much cocaine on a regular basis? Were you getting it once a week, every day?
100 keys every day.
You were getting 100 kilos every day.
My last 2 years, yeah, every day.
Every single day.
Oh, absolutely.
Can you say how you were actually getting it?
In the trunk of cars.
So Blandone would basically set
up. He'd have
up
a driver to pull up wherever I wanted it dropped off, and they'd pull it there and leave the keys under the floor mat. My guys would get in it and take it to where I wanted it.
Okay. How big was your actual crew in terms of people that answer directly to you? Obviously, when you're talking about hundreds of kilos, it's going all over the world, and there's all types of people.
I understand what you're saying. Yeah. Like, if you see the special they did on CBS called LA Gang Godfathers, I think they had me surrounded by about 25 guys,
okay,
30 guys who were like they call lieutenants.
Okay.
But it varied from time to time, you know. Guys quit, get fired, you know.
Get busted.
Get busted, which was rare.
Why was it rare?
I taught my guys how to sell and how to avoid the law.
Okay.
So they were pretty good at avoiding the law.
How did you really manage a crew like this? Because when you talk about money, this much money, you're talking about drugs, you're talking about women, you're talking about violence, you're talking about gangs. And then you're also talking about law enforcement. How do you really manage a crew of this many people and keep it from just falling apart in an afternoon, which happens all
the
time?
The first thing you got to do, you have to really be humble in yourself and always look at situations from the other person's point of view. That's one of the things that I do. I always try to see your point of view first, because I know to you, the most important thing is your point of view. You don't care about my point of view, but your point of view is always important. So I usually go with your point of view, and most of the time is, how can I get food, shelter, and clothes?
Okay.
Those are motivating, really, really high motivating factors. So if you can provide those to most people, they'll give you their attention. I mean, You're going to run into some, though. That's, you know, you can give them that. And they still going to be, what did we call it earlier? We were talking about it earlier. I forgot what it was. But we were talking about shady or something like that.
Yeah.
Or shiesty or something we called it. Yeah. So no matter what you do, you still can run into those type of people. But, you know, you just be able to roll past it.
Okay. So you had 25 people, roughly, allegedly,
yeah,
moving up to $3 million a day in product.
Some days.
On some days.
And there'd be days where there's $2
million. Yeah.
$1.5 million.
Okay.
$1.2 million.
They don't really portray Chicago like that. And he did a lot of funny shit with it, man. And it just made me laugh at certain moments, and I think that wasn't.
Okay, 773, are you available? 773. Okay. They're probably busy. Well, let's see what we have else here.
Construction. It's about 40% complete. All right, so this is the second Wafati that we have started construction on. People live in here off and on. People come and stay. They come from Airbnb or directly because they're familiar with our website. It keeps the water out. It's not insulated yet. So it can get cold, but the amazing thing is, like, it was going to be a warm day outside. I don't know. But it's a little warmer outside, and we come in, and do you feel it's already much cooler?
Significantly.
So the thermal mass that surrounds the structure is absorbing the heat from this space and keeping it cool. And when we're done with this structure, we hope that we will have created annualized thermal inertia, that it will be something so that it doesn't require any heat at all, we hope. And so it'll have on two of the walls, and then on the roof, and of course underneath the building is going to be a huge thermal mass, and that will fit underneath a layer of insulation. So it'll keep, once it's warmed in the summer, we'll be able to use that heat from the summer to heat it through the winter. That's the plan. In the meantime, we built a rocket mass heater in here so people could stay warm until the building is complete. This one is the one that's featured in Ernie Erica's new book, The Rocket Mass Heater Builder's Guide. I think that this one of the things that we did with this particular build is we wanted the world's most boring build, something that's very basic, very simple, to be able to demonstrate how to properly build a rocket mass heater. And so this is it. This is the basics. This is a simple build, and it's holding up very well. It's doing an amazing job. This rocket mass heater has heated this building for two winters now. It's about to start on its third winter.
773, mic open.
Hi there. How are you?
Oh, wait a minute. Okay, you're there. All right, what do you got for us, Reba?
Should I put on my ballerina shoes? God save you. Oh. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I had Asia was she's calling from the suburban area. She was actually listening in on my speakerphone on my other phone. She said, "What's going on?" So that was pretty interesting. That conversation about Donald Trump. That was interesting. That's
I'm trying to find the video that belongs to the channel on YouTube, and man, I haven't been able to find it yet. I can see the woman's face in my mind, but I have, because I just ran across that audio. I didn't even realize I had it. Well, anyway, and I typed in Van Jones crying, but there's a bunch of Van Jones videos of him crying, so. Yeah, I'll run across it one day.
Well, what about the conversation? You search under, what was she talking about? Donald Trump.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me do that. I haven't done that.
So Google.
Van Jones, Donald Trump. Well, that pops up a bunch of videos. And I can't find one, because if I recognize a thumbnail, that's, but no, God, there's so many videos on that. Anyway, all right, what do you got for us today?
So we are going to continue with our fundraising efforts for the Black Youth Metropolis, Brownsville Leadership Academic Center. We have some new supporters, COPA. We spoke with them recently. So they're interested in making the connect for us to build a flower bed. And we were certainly, along with, I'm thinking about the location behind the Grand Ballroom, do a raised flower bed behind there the same day we do our tiny mobile solar cabin.
June 22nd. All right, since we're talking about fundraising, because I was going through some distinctions here, because I got one friend of mine, he's gung-ho on YouTube subscribers. But then after I thought about it, just because you have a whole lot of YouTube subscribers, you have two basic types of subscribers. Most subscribers on YouTube do not generate any income for the person who has that channel. So you have non-subscribers and you have monetized subscribers. So when it comes to, I mean, like I say, I like eBay, because on eBay, you're not looking for subscribers, you're looking for customers. On Facebook Marketplace, you're not looking for subscribers, you're looking for customers. Now, when it comes to fundraising, now, it all depends on which way you think might be the best way to make money. There's people that look for donations, or would it be easier to raise money if you're selling something? And if you're selling something, which are the best social media platforms to sell whatever you're going to sell? Because that might be the quickest and the fastest way to generate the funds you need. All food for thought. What do you think?
Well, I actually want tangible products. Unless they hear a totally like a dramatic, serious, dramatic story, you know, people move on compassion. It's not a bad thing that they don't necessarily support what we would think would be, generally support, you know, this. It's great, but there's a different audience too. So that's what I've learned when it comes down to me being an artist, recording artist, singer, performing artists, they're the audience or area, the target group of people that will support this effort too.
Okay.
Products and no products. I'll give you this scenario. I was recently with the farmers group. You may recall meeting Bob or Will Crosby. So the farmers group, the goal is to grow crops and then sell them, create jobs. People have to till the soil, they have to actually work the farm, and sustain the community at the same time. So we were going for profit. Then they wanted to flip not for profit, which I was like, you want to be consistent. So people ended up getting burned out, people doing working on other things, different projects, you know. So the group actually fell through, but the concept is real. So I would have hoped that they kept to the – and first of all, when you meet too many times a week, once a month is ideal so people won't get burned out. But the concept was to actually grow the food so people are like, okay, yeah, I want to be a part of it. Because now, even though the physical product is not there just yet, we're talking about gardens and creating jobs. That's a big deal. Sometimes the vision has to be bigger than the group, meaning we're not a 100-person group, but at the same time, we also were going to offer memberships. So different aspects. Those who were invested, you know, we talk about farming, it's a multi-million dollar streams of income, because you get production of raw materials, foods, consumable products.
Yeah, now that is that's why I'm organizing the ebook on this, because, like I say, with social media, it's you have to decide on what do you want, you know, and what, you know, it, like, say, Blog Talk. I use Blog Talk sort of like a business card. That's how I use Blog Talk. Helps build credibility. And then if I want to get to know somebody, I can invite them on this and, you know, within an hour, 2 hours, establish some rapport that way. Whereas if I needed to raise a certain amount of money, I would use a different platform other than Blog Talk, unless it's part of a longer-range strategy. So, and of course, our imaginations, a person with a little vivid imagination can take, well, put it this way, the more resourceful you are, excuse me, and aware you are, you can come up with ways that the average person might not think of when it comes to generating income. So, you know, one way to raise, how much more money you need to raise for those kids, Reba?
I have not been able to reach Sabrine, so I don't even know what the figures are from the field, because she's canvassing. I know she wanted to move, so I don't actually even know. But I was able to get around 500. The exact number I'll let you know after today. But I last time we talked, I had about 2-something. So it's slow motion, but it's coming. And the GoFundMe wasn't the best, because that's part of where this conversation started from. The GoFundMe like say people want a tangible product, and I think a product.
Kids selling hot dogs.
I do have a video.
Hot dogs,
there,
lemonade.
Huh? What? What do you mean?
Have those kids? Had the kids sell hot dogs? Had the kids sell hot dogs, lemonade, and cupcakes?
Yeah, that's probably what's gonna look like once we get started, because the children will bring it, because right now the video is up there. That was a good touch, but I want to change that video too, just update it, because I'm not speaking a little Spanish on there. The children are doing what they do. But it's just not as engaging as some of the other videos that I have. So I'm going to update. I'm going to put a different video up there or add a video to that GoFundMe and just see how it goes. Because I noticed that with birthday fundraisers on Facebook, people, they donate to those organizations. They do, they do donate. People will donate.
Right. I'm thinking of, I just realized, I ran across this thing on how big is an acre, and you can fit 1,032 king-size beds on 1 acre of land. Interesting.
Oh, shit.
Matter of fact, do you go camping, Reba?
No, but I did figure out it was Portage, Indiana, that had Yogi Bear Camp. My friend who had those, I couldn't think of the name for nothing. I knew it began with a P. It was Portage, Indiana, where my friend had, it's a Yogi Bear Camp out there.
But
and
you've never been camping?
Oh yeah, years ago. But I don't really care for nothing like that.
Why not?
No.
Why not, really?
No.
There's all different type of camping now. There's camping, all right.
Well,
there's different type of camping. All right, like there's a pitcher tent type camping. Okay, go in the woods. Pitch
so I've
tent,
done that. My mom always
cook,
do that. Yeah.
Pitch cook,
a tent,
cook
yeah,
food
that.
Around a campfire.
I'm not going to the woods. What'd you say?
You don't like the woods. You don't like the woods.
I'm not trying to. No, I'm not. No. Doing that. No.
What about glamping? Glamorous camping.
Okay, thank you. I like that terminology. Glamping. We show, I'm a popularize that if it's not popular, yeah.
Oh yeah. You can type it on any search engine, glamping. There's a lot of people who glamp. They get out in those woods and get in a pimped out tent and everything. Now there's Euro camping. When I was over in Germany I first went Euro camping in Italy. That was pretty cool. But it is, there's all type of, glamping, camping, different types of camping. Let's see, but you're, all right, you ever go fishing?
I don't think so, no.
Okay. We got to find a happy medium. Oh, all right, glamping, you might fit into glamping.
Mm-hmm.
What about ever sleep in a cabin?
I don't think so.
We got to get you out in the woods. Back to nature.
I've done nature walks. That's good enough. Yeah,
okay,
that's awesome.
Okay, well, now that all right, that's good. Hey, stay in the cabin one night. And whatnot. You don't have to worry about no lions, tigers, and bears. You ain't to worry about that. But sitting around that campfire. You ever do any campfire marshmallows?
S'mores. Yes. My aunt lived in Carroll Strait, and it was new to my siblings and myself. So it was like, okay, you're going to melt some marshmallows with graham crackers and chocolate.
Yeah, that's what my s'mores are. Yeah, that's,
You have to put the marshmallow on, Reba. No, Kenny. Oh, Kenny. That's my sister's nickname, Kenny. Her name is Kenyatta. No, Kenny. No. No, you gotta smash. You gotta smush it. Oh yeah.
Well, you sound like a totally different person, but with that voice.
I want to start doing some skits for our fundraisers. We're gonna incorporate skits into that. So.
Okay, well that's good. You got some talent there. Well now let's see. Yeah, because up in your neck of the woods, man, he's got a whole, you know, there's a whole lot of nature places up that way, I would imagine, between Milwaukee and Illinois.
My sons and I were looking at the place.
It gets cold up there, though.
Chicago,
I wouldn't want to go camping. Yeah, I wouldn't want to go camping up in that wintertime up there, that's for sure. This time of year, great, but September, I imagine the weather starts changing in September up that way. Well, in place of camping, what other activities happen up there during the wintertime?
Oh, man, I was just talking about how I used to take my sons skating, and then in the wintertime, they turned into, I bought my first house.
Ice skate or roller skate?
My aunt, I don't know how to do that. That was awesome.
Yeah, I don't know how to do that. I've never even attempted to put a pair of ice skates on. I imagine kids up there play hockey, don't they?
Where?
Up in Chicago, Milwaukee. They play hockey, ice hockey.
Chicago Hawks. Yeah, we got a team. Yeah.
Yeah, I know you got a professional team, but I'm talking about just kids.
Oh, sports.
When it gets cold up there, they go ice skating.
My brother did, actually. Yeah, my brother did have. I was wondering what those things were. With the pucks, the ice pucks. The pucks.
Yeah,
hockey
puck.
Hockey pucks, yeah.
Yeah, I hate to be hit by one of those. That's a solid piece of rubber. But,
That's why I had those little helmets on, guards, whatever.
Well, Chicago's got basically everything you need up there year-round when it comes to sports. I mean, activities.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's got every type of sports team. Chicago Bulls, Chicago Bears, Chicago Cubs.
I was grabbing my lunch. Yeah, my sons were in the Derrick Rose basketball camp. Yeah, Derrick Rose was a popular basketball player out here.
What's that? They were
in his camp. They won. My sons, they're champions.
You got a bunch of them up that way.
They won the tournament. Yep.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's this never-ending activity up in that town. There's one place I would like to eat up that way. It's a woman, she was on Oprah one or two times. It's a black woman. I'm assuming she's still living. She's a vegetarian. She's got a vegetarian restaurant.
Oh, was it Evelyn's Food Chicago. Love? Evelyn's Food Love or what?
I don't know her name. Let me see if I can look her up.
Because that place.
Well, she was on Oprah one or two times.
Okay.
Black vegan. I'm surprised Oprah didn't have her on a lot more time.
Okay. Vegetarian restaurant.
Up in Chicago, black woman runs it or owns it. Let's see, black woman vegan restaurant. Chicago. Okay. All right, I found at least one. Knowing Chicago, they probably have more than one. Let's see. Let's see, 8 black-owned vegan restaurants and pop-ups in Chicago. Step 2, I don't know if this is this in Chicago? Well, let me put it in Oprah. It'll pop up that way, man. Oprah moved her studios out of Chicago too, didn't she?
Yeah, she got up out of here.
Okay, oh man. They got more than one black woman with a vegetarian restaurant up there.
Oh. Yeah, you Soul Veg pop up? The Soul Veg? Soul Vegetarian?
That sounds like a place. They got one up there? It's Soul Vegetarian?
It's called Veg City now. Soul Veg City.
I know they had one in D.C. like that. Hold it. Let's see, Chicago. They usually bought, like I said, they got, Chicago's got more than one, so.
I gotta find my car. I forgot they had they got this dang on movie thing they doing. Figure out what they did with my car. They filming the car. They filming a movie. Let me hold on.
Okay, well, go tend to that.
So they're in front of my building. They filmed this Chicago, what's it called? Chicago, not Chicago Fire. It's called Chicago something. Shy?
The Shy? Chicago PD? Oh, The Shy?
I think it's called The Shy.
I've seen one or two episodes of The Shy. They got a lot of stores in Chicago. They got Chicago PD. They got Chicago Fire. They got another one dealing with the hospital. I don't know what they call that.
And I was up early, too. I could have moved my car. What was it, the Chicago MD or something like that?
Yeah.
And I know they're not pulling people's cars just to make some money. Let me say this. They should have been, if they moving cars, maybe just move them to a convenient spot or something like that. You know, I don't know. I mean, give us an idea where you're going to move our cars to. Not it. Wow. So, I don't know. I think maybe they should, because they, you know, I was tired, but they need to put their signs in a different place. They hit them. Well, I was parked on this side. And the truck's not even out here yet. I hope they didn't like tow my car nowhere, and I'm supposed to have to get it out of a storage or something like that. But normally they just relocate your car.
Yeah, because that costs
somewhere
money.
Goes back. Well, it shouldn't cost me no money, because first of all, I'm like, what kind of agreement does the landlord have with these people? Because I think that sign should have been on the gate. But we had a car lot and right behind my building, too. So I'm trying to find it by my alarm. It's a nice day for walking. Talk about a nature walk, right?
Uh-huh.
So let me see what's going on with my car, and I will talk to you a little later. I will certainly get Asia to tune in. She was very interested. All right?
I made $3 million in just 6 months as a 20-year-old female entrepreneur, and you can too. Growing up, I was always in like the advanced classes. In high school, I was in the AP, the honors classes, and so even being separated from so many people, even starting at a young age, it definitely made me realize that I'm a little bit different. It was a little bit hard to fit in. I'm black, I'm Hispanic, I'm Muslim. I went through so many different phases of trying to figure out what I wanted to do. I remember there was a point in time where I wanted to be an engineer, I wanted to be an interior designer. My sophomore year, I lived with my dad. That same year, my brother Jamil lived with my dad, and we were always super close. First day I got there, he took me to his room and he showed me this stack of books that he had. And one of them was called How to Win Friends and Influence People. And he's like, you gotta read this book. You gotta start reading. It's really gonna change your mindset. It's really gonna help you be successful. He had this whiteboard on his wall and it said, I will be a millionaire by 22. And in my head, like, I was thinking, like, where'd he come up with that? Like, we've never seen a millionaire in our life. Money was never something that we grew up seeing. It was never something that we were familiar with. My family never had a lot of money in any aspect. I thought that it was amazing that he had such drive and could picture a goal that seemed so far off, but to him seemed achievable. Junior year, I was living by myself. I had actually moved away from my dad's, and I was living with family friends. The same year that I was living by myself, my oldest brother passed away. And when he passed away, my whole perspective on life changed. Everything, like school, the people that I hung around, what was important to me, how I was spending each day, because I really realized that life is so, so, so short. And the fact that my brother was taken at 22, I was only 16, and he was one of the closest people to me. And so I never understood why he was taken so soon. I didn't understand it. I was going through my own grieving process. It changed everything and put life into a different perspective. I really got very selective with what I was putting into my mind, the people that I was hanging around. I got very isolated. I started really just focusing on my art, on working, and really just being alone and focusing on my family. I was asking myself, I didn't see my brother before he passed away because it wasn't winter break yet, because I had to stay in school for winter break. Was school ever that important where I didn't see my brother before he passed away because I had to be at school? You could not even finish school and your life could be over. I have other things that are more important to me, my family, my time, what I want to do with my life. Because we grow up from kindergarten to 12th grade in school, we naturally rely on like who we are as a student as part of our identity. What you start to realize is like all you're doing is giving power to someone else to tell you how valuable you are or to tell you how qualified you are. I didn't need someone else to tell me if I was worth doing a job or not or if I was good enough to do something.
things, because if I wanted to do something, I just had to decide to do it, and I don't need validation from someone else, whether that be a teacher, whether that be a professor, whether that be an employer, from anyone. You don't actually need validation from someone. You just have to decide within yourself that you're capable of doing it and go for it. Once I got into college and I started going through the day-to-days, I was working two full-time jobs. It was exhausting. I spent a lot of time doing things for other people. It was like I was doing my schoolwork for my teachers, but it didn't really make sense to me. I wasn't really understanding what I was supposed to get out of it. I was nannying to make enough money to survive, but it wasn't enough to do anything beyond that because I had to spend all my time working. One day I was sitting in class and I was listening to my teacher talk, and he gave us this huge assignment, and it was a predominantly white school, so everyone partnered up into these groups, and I was just sitting there by myself, and again, I felt like I didn't fit in. I started to, like, just wondering, what am I doing here? These assignments, these aren't helping me progress in the area that I want to progress in. They're kind of just like buffer time. They're just busy assignments to keep us busy. It wasn't really what I needed to achieve the success I wanted, and actually at the same time, I was finishing up first semester of my freshman year of college. I got an interview with this very high-profile family for nannying, and I'd never had an experience like that. And even when the experience came up, I kept asking myself, like, why me? Like, why am I getting this opportunity to work for such a high-profile family? I'm an 18-year-old who's not even CPR certified. Out of all people, why would they pick me? And my mom kept telling me, like, that's not the right mentality to have. Like, who cares if you're 18 years old? You know that you're an amazing nanny. You know that you're caring, compassionate, that you know how to care for children. You've done that your whole life. And then I started asking myself, would I rather learn from a professor, or would I rather learn from a billionaire who has the lifestyle that I want, and I could actually learn from him in person and see his lifestyle? So at the end of freshman year, I remember we were finishing up with classes, and I was listening to these tapes, and they said, people who are successful make decisions quickly, and they stick to those decisions. I decided right then and there, I was like, I'm going to be done with school. I'm going to drop out. And so that same day, I texted my counselor, and I said, please unenroll me from all upcoming classes. And she was like, oh no, like, is something wrong? Is there something I can help with? And I was like, no, thank you. Just please unenroll me. I'll no longer be attending Maryville. If I'm not going to go to school, I have to figure out how I'm going to be a successful entrepreneur. I started reading books. I started watching YouTube videos. I was doing cosmetology. I learned how to do nails completely by myself. So after trying e-com, drop shipping, trading stock options, I finally started Airbnb, and Airbnb actually went amazing for me. I started off by renting. I actually didn't own any properties. I now have 11 Airbnbs that I rent. And even from that, I learned how to do rental arbitrage. And at first, I didn't really understand it fully, but I was learning as I went. I kind of went through the mistakes, the learning curve, figured out what worked and what didn't work. And then everyone started seeing, like, this 20-year-old girl is making five figures a month, making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a month from Airbnb without renting any properties. And everyone started asking me, like, can you teach me? Can you help me? Like, how are you doing it? If I can genuinely help someone else and make a difference in their life through something that I learned, then why not? Me and my partner, we decided to create a coaching business. Bryson played a huge role in helping in our success with Airbnb, even changing my mindset from when my brother first passed away. I was grieving a lot. I was really sad. When I met Bryson, he really helped me realize that you have to have a positive mindset if you want to attract positive things. Everyone started asking a ton of questions. So after we started our coaching business, we kind of just kept scaling and growing. We made up to $60,000 in a month from Airbnb. And then we started getting students who were also getting results. And so we started an entire coaching program. I was actually able to hire a lot of my family to work with me to keep scaling this coaching business so we could keep providing coaching to more and more students and give them more and more offers. We have done for you offers. We have mentorships. And that way there's something for everyone to learn and something for everyone to grow from. I remember when we first started our free class, I told my brother, I don't think you need to go to college, but that's just me. I promise you this month, I'm going to make $100,000 this month. June of 2022, I made $100,000 in a month. That was my first six-figure month. After that, I told my brother, like, I'm going to make $200,000 this month. In July, we made over $200,000. Our revenue just kept increasing as we started making more and more of an impact for more people. And in October, me and Bryson, we were like, we're going to make $1 million this month. And in October, we made $1 million. November, we made $1 million. Finishing up the end of the year, we generated over $3 million from our Airbnbs and also from our coaching. The intentional actions, the positive mindset, and actually living in what you say you're going to do, that's how we made $3 million. For most of the journey, me and Bryson, we pretty much kept everything low-key just because no one really understands it. And the way that we grew up, no one really had a lot of money. So imagine going to people who've never seen a lot of money and being like, we made $100,000 or we made $1 million at 20 years old. They're not going to understand. And there's just a lot of people who don't understand the concept of entrepreneurship. When we were finally able to start bringing our family in and bringing people in and actually changing their lives, I think it was so inspirational to them. What I realized is that making more money, you're not a different person. You're the same person, but it gives you so much more freedom and it gives you so much more opportunity. So for me, I've been able to work with my whole family and now inspire them and show them that they're so much more. And this is, even them working with me now is just a stepping
stepping stone for what they can do and give them more time freedom so that they can do those things. Even being an entrepreneur and being a female or being a minority, it's definitely different. People look at you different. I walk into places, no one knows I have money, and they look at me, they kind of brush me off because they wouldn't think that I have money. Or I walk into a business setting with Bryson and they immediately talk to Bryson because they don't think that I have anything to do with the business. They just think that I'm there. But what they don't know is that I'm actually a female entrepreneur. And just because you're a woman doesn't mean that you can't be driven, that you can't be outspoken or say how you feel. If you have a dream, go after it and chase it. Don't let the people that surround you, don't let people that you grew up with, don't let your parents, don't let society tell you that it's not okay. I think a big thing is learning who to listen to, because what I learned is that everyone has an opinion, but if they don't have what I want or they don't have the lifestyle that I want to live or hold the same values as me or the same morals as me, as much as I love them and as much as I respect them, it doesn't make sense for me to listen to them because they don't have what I want. And so what I would tell my younger self would be, think bigger and learn who to listen to. And then not just that, but it's okay to be yourself. You don't have to feel scared if you don't fit in. You don't have to feel like you have to conform to society or to what people want you to be. Each day that you're intentional, little by little, even when you don't know it or when you can't see it, you're building the life that you want. You have to know what you want and be intentional behind it every day, and it'll come to you.